This is Andy Orem from O'Reilly Media. I'm having a series of conversations with people who are going to be speaking at the Open Source Convention about healthcare. And today I'm talking to Fred Trotter, who is rather in a central position in the open source movement in healthcare. Could you tell us a bit about how you got into this position, Fred?
Well, I guess it's the answer to that is, like so many people, I just fell into it. My grandfather started a medical manager dealership in the 80s with my aunt and uncle. And through that, we found that medical manager was kind of not treating us or our clients right. And so, they asked me if I wanted to look for a solution. And of course, I was an open source enthusiast at the time working in the security industry. And I said, well, I wonder if there's something really good out there in the open source. And I looked and I found that there was a lot of stuff happening and that most of it lacked billing. So I wrote the first open source billing engine that could work with any electronic healthcare record and do both paper and electronic billing. And I released it under the GPL. And that project was called Freebie. And I won some awards for that and started a reputation as someone who was interested in working with open source generally, not particularly with one project, but to increase collaboration between projects since my code could be used and was used by lots of different people. Since then, lots of other people have released much better billing systems than the one I originally wrote. It's really humbling to look back at what I was trying to do back then. It's not very good code. But as a result, I've become kind of a respected member of the open source healthcare community since I was kind of in the middle generation. The old generation is, of course, the Vista hard hats and the Underground Railroad. Then there's my generation of people who've been in this for about 10 years. And then there's the people who are kind of starting out and doing some of the exciting things with InHin Direct and InHin Connect and kind of this new push for open source in healthcare.
I've been talking to some of the InHin people this week. And I know at the conference you're going to be delivering a talk which pulls together a lot of this, talks about those different generations. But before we go into that, I thought there was a very interesting project that you just released, NPIdentify, and you were brought in once again by some experts to work on that. And tell us a bit about what NPI is and what NPIdentify does.
So first of all, NPI stands for National Provider Identifier, and what that is that. And again, as we were talking before the interview, you have to understand it. You really have to understand the problem before the NPI came out. And the problem before was that every doctor for every insurance company would have a separate ID, and these, a given doctor could have 30, 40 of these IDs, and every time they billed, they had to put the right ID going to the right insurance company in order to get the bill paid, because it was a big headache. So they decided they're going to issue national IDs for doctors, and that was going to be the kind of the one ID to rule them. And they asked doctors to submit a bunch of rich data about who they were and what they did, including address and contact information, and also taxonomy information, which is what kind of doctor are you or what kind of healthcare provider are you. And then recently they've started requiring that anyone who prescribes medication or who bills the government has to have one of these IDs, and that's made it much more of a requisite. Almost all doctors have an NPI. If you take only cash payments, which most doctors can't do, and you don't prescribe medications, then you can avoid having an NPI. But for the most part, it's a list of every doctor and every other healthcare provider who can prescribe medicine in the United States. And there's about 3 million records in the NPI database. But if you actually go to try to get information from this NPI database, in the search tool that that CMS provides for the purpose, it's terrible. You really can't get a lot of information. And I was approached several years ago, I think 2 years ago, from by the HIT Transition guys who used
a couple of acronyms that people might not recognize: the CMS and the HIT, H-I-T.
CMS is the people who run is the government agency Medicare that runs Medicare. And HIT stands for Health Information Technology, and HIT Transition, that was a blog, a bunch of guys who were NPI experts who were looking to get to munge this open data, and they came across my experience with open source. And of course, I've always been interested also in open data and realized that I was a good person to collaborate on this. And so what we've been working on for a long time has been a way to view this data in a richer way. And what I have been working on, and when I first started this out, first started the script to munge this, you can download the NPI database as a comma delimited file from CMS. It's updated on an almost monthly basis, and it's got 3 million rows in this pretty massive flat text file. Well, it's not normalized data. So I spent months normalizing this data so that, for instance, when there's an address, that address only appears one time in the database, and every provider who shares that address links to that normalized record, standard database stuff, but coming from a completely unnormalized and also unchecked database. CMS doesn't do a very good job of making sure that when they ask for the information from the doctors, that they get accurate information. So there's a lot of fat fingering, misspelling of your, city name and stuff like this. It really confuses the database. So I worked on trying to fix some of these things and to get a normalized database out of it. When I first ran the import script, which was going to translate my comma delimited text file into my MySQL database, it took, I did the math and had it, calculate the little dot, dot, dot thing you see when a program is working, and you only have to wait this much longer for it to be done. And it was 45 days to run the script.
Better than the 3 million entries.
Exactly. To do this, and I realized I needed to learn a lot more about how to optimize scripts and how to optimize my database in order to get this to be a usable system. And essentially, the fact that it took so long is that I had to teach myself some of those advanced techniques, and now I know how to do really cool things with data that I didn't know how to do before. Data mining, essentially. I had to teach myself data mining. I had a lot of fun doing it, and now what we've got is we're able to provide that as a search engine to let other people mine that data. And one of the things you can see is things like a lot of doctors, the NPI database is split in two between individual numbers and organizational numbers. So if you're a corporation, you can register for a number, and if you're an individual, you can register for a number. And a doctor sometimes would essentially be their own corporation for liability reasons, and so they'd be in the NPI database twice. But that's really hard to tell, and it's confusing for people who are doing billing, because it's like you have to search the organization side of the house, which there's one form that CMS provides for that, and then there's another form for individual searches. Our system will search both at once and kind of give you the information that you really wanted without you having to do more advanced searches and repeated searches in order to get the same information, which means basically we're exposing some of that richness in the searches that you can't see otherwise. The other thing we've really done is we've done much more advanced type of doctor searches. So, for instance, using our search engine, you can do something like, I want to see every cardiologist in Florida. And that's an easy search to do on our system, and it's impossible to do on the original system or anybody else's system. There are other NPI search engines besides the one provided by the government. And as far as I know, we're the only ones who let you do that. You can search for all the eye doctors in Texas, all the cardiologists in Florida, all that stuff. You can just download these enormous lists of doctors, and that's pretty cool. The other thing we're able to do is start to show some of the social networking and the kind of relationships between doctors. So when you look at any given NPI record in our system, in the NPI Identify system, you can also see everyone else who shares the same address, phone number, and more importantly, other identifier. So again, remember there was this whole world of crazy many identifiers that doctors have. Well, you still have to have some of them. What you can do is you can say, you can see other doctors who are using the same, for instance, Medicare ID or the same Aetna ID or something like this. So you can start to see the relationships between groups of doctors. And that means if Dr. Jones is partnered with Dr. Smith, sometimes you can detect that, programmatically speaking, just by seeing that they share an address or phone number or identifier, which means that essentially what we're publishing is a Facebook-like social network data source, and we're trying to open it up so that we can have other people use it as an API, so that you can go and you can write other programs. And of course, that's really what I care about, and the reason I've been working on this so long is that what I want to provide to the open source community and to the community of people who want to exercise healthcare data, I want to provide something that is a open data source that they can go dip into and say, well, I've got this NPI and I want to know its relationship to all of the other NPIs or the NPIs in its zip code or something like that. And they can get that data in a programmatic way and do even more interesting things than what I can do. Now, you actually sent me an email and asking, well, how does this match up with some of the other data that the HHS is released on hospital quality? And that data is very often keyed based on the Medicare provider ID, which is one of these sub-IDs that comes in the NPI database, which means that hopefully, and again, this is not something that the current system does, but soon what I'll be able to do is when you ask about, for instance, Herman Hospital in Houston, Texas, a very large hospital system, you can say, well, show me the NPI information for that hospital. And then when you see that, you'll also be able to see all of their quality indications right there. So, you know, how many beta blockers information that they publish and other healthcare quality indicators will be right there on the surface. And you'll be able to see them right alongside the address and the phone number. And so essentially by mashing up these information and providing it a fully mashed source, which is really high quality data from different sources about these doctors, we'll be able to let other people build really exciting things that have to do with more complex things. For instance, you might be able to calculate based on mashing up the data that I will be publishing the implications for the number of cardiologists in a given zip code to the quality of cardiological quality indicators that HHS does and mash that up against population. So essentially what we're doing is, again, the government's released this data and it's great, it's awesome, but it's too complex and it's too hard to see what's there. We're going to create another platform on top of that to make it simpler still to do really complex to make it easy to do really complex health information queries about public health information. So it's pretty exciting, and we're really excited to actually have launched the site. We've been planning to launch the site for months and months and months, and I just haven't been able to get around to it. So it's pretty cool, and I hope people – it's an alpha site. It's abysmally slow. I still haven't done all the optimizations that I need to, but you can start playing with it and seeing – you know, how things work with it, which is pretty cool.
We'll put a URL pointing to the site and also to your blog that introduced the site. We'll put that into the text that goes along with this audio. I'd
Thanks.
Be curious to see whether there's a correlation between the number of providers in a particular area and the cost of providing service.
Those are exactly the kinds of things that you might be able to answer simply with simple scripts hitting our data source that would essentially have been only the domain of data mining experts before. So somebody like you who's comfortable with a Perl script could figure that out, whereas before it would have required you to do a tremendous number of hours of work to get to the point where you'd have the data in a format that you would need to do something like that. So it's pretty cool.
Health and Human Services, when they made their big announcement about releasing all that data, they were saying, well, we're really waiting for apps to come along to use it. It seems like you provided a key missing piece here.
Well, I mean, one of the things is that we certainly are providing an app, and that app is give me all the data about a given organization that you have and give it to me all in one place. That has not existed before. And it'll let me search for organizations. One thing that's kind of interesting is that the name of an organization listed in the NPI database and the name of the organization listed over in the health quality databases aren't always the same thing. So this will be the first time when you can search for a given name. Like I know the hospital around the corner is called Mercy of you know. Mary something or another, right? You know, these crazy hospital names that we have. But you might not find that in the NPI database because it's only in the quality measures or vice versa. So by mashing up just merely the names and having them in the same database, it's tremendously simpler to even just find information about your local hospital. So that's the kind of stuff that we were trying to figure out.
It seems like you went through a kind of data curation hell, very familiar to people who are putting together databases, but how can you ensure that going forward the doctors will enter the data in a format you can use?
You know, this is kind of the fun things that we're kind of planning and we're not sure if we're going to be able to do, but you know, for instance, the Houston area code, the zip codes always start with 77. And there's, for instance, two or three doctors in the database who have misspelled the word Houston but still have the right zip code. So I can programmatically tell, based on doing standard geocode stuff, for there's a lot of good open source geocode APIs out there, when a doctor has fat fingered some of his address information. And I also have that doctor's fax information. So I have thought about just sending, you know, 500 or so faxes automatically to these doctors saying, hey, you are in the wrong city. You've written this word, and that's not the right city, and so people have trouble finding you because you fat-fingered this information. I can't fix it because obviously you're responsible for managing your own MPI record, but you could, and we're just letting you know as a service. You know, obviously I can't make the government do anything, and I can't make doctors do anything, but sometimes people just don't know that they have the wrong data in there. And so we might be able to help that. It's still up in the air. There's a lot more stuff that's higher priority than that, because again, tens of thousands of doctors in Houston spelled Houston right, and I'd like to make sure that those doctors have cool information about them up and functional before I worry about the three that made the mistake. So, but it's interesting, and what would really be nice is if I could find a way to do that with some of the more deeper elements like taxonomy and things like that. But we'll see.
Also, on your blog, you indicated there was some kind of problem with the funding. How is this going to be funded? How are you going to continue to be remunerated?
Well, you know, I'm lucky because my work is sponsored by an organization called Cautious Patient, and they give me a very generous latitude to work on my own projects. And so I don't have to worry about where my time is going to come from. What I do have to worry about is where the server cost is going to come from. And right now, especially in the alpha stage, with a not optimized state, if even 15 or 20 people started using the system, it would bring it down. So it's an alpha system, and I need to make it more substantial. But even once that's done and it becomes popular, which it will, because there's already information there you just simply can't get elsewhere, I'm going to need to find some way to cover those server costs. And I don't know. Maybe I'll advertise. You know, there's other MPI searches that are allowing you to search this data besides ours, and they have, you know, the really tacky Google ad, like between all the data elements. So you're looking there and you just have trouble even seeing the right text because there's so many Google ads. We're definitely not going to do that, although we might try doing some advertising. We might also try the crack model. You know, the first hit is free. You can do 5 searches without paying, but after you start doing, you know, more than that, you have to pay $20 a year. Servers don't cost much in the world of the cloud, which is awesome, which means I don't really have to worry about making a lot of money. I just have to make some. And so that leaves a lot of kind of low-level monetization options open.
That was a fascinating look at some of your own work, and I think it really helped to establish your credentials with the listeners. But actually, what I was hoping to talk about originally was all the stuff you're going to say at the open source convention, where you're introducing other people's open source projects. So let's talk a bit about open source in healthcare.
So, you know, I am – there's two groups of people involved in the movement, and we're all cooperating to make good open source software. But basically, they break down into the people who think open source software is awesome and cool, and the people like me who think the open source software in healthcare is awesome and cool and is really the only way to make progress with health information at all. And so I have a very strong take on that. Now, what I'm going to talk about at the conference, I'm going to be covering a lot of projects, and I will cover the projects that are talking at the same conference, which a lot of the really important ones already are. I'll be covering them very lightly and talking about a lot of the projects that aren't there a little more deeply. But mostly I want to tie these projects together with a common theme of how open source in healthcare can impact health informatics and healthcare generally in a very deep way that's not possible in any other way. That's my general theme. And then, you know, the details of which projects I choose is probably going to be take a close look at the schedule. I'm going to have to talk about Vista in a different way than the Vista people often do, because if you talk about Vista as a software package, it's very interesting. But when you talk about Vista as a heritage, it's even more enlightening. And what Vista is, if you're familiar with open source software generally, you're comfortable when you say Linux or Apache, you kind of have a deep understanding of what those things mean. VA Vista will be, if you, once you really get into it, is like going to Australia for the first time, and you just realize there's an entire open source ecosystem, not just a project or a piece of software, but a whole ecosystem that's been operating under different rules for long enough that it's essentially evolved in a very different and unique way than open source generally. And most importantly, holds a template for how open source software and healthcare can work in a way that causes what I call the Vista effect. And what I mean the Vista effect is that if you look at the quality of care delivered in the VA, what you see is that because of their very clever deployment of software, veterans in the United States actually receive substantially better care than any of the rest of us do. And that's the magnitude of that statement, is huge. They're receiving better health care because of the way, it's not just that the VA has invested in technology, because lots of people have. Lots of people have invested in healthcare technology and have not seen an improvement in care. The VA has seen the most improvement of care. And the way that they have built Vista over the years, which is to say how they invested, is how you get the Vista effect. Now, one thing, and again, I concede this, is that the VA essentially is socialized medicine for veterans, which means their financial incentives are different. And because of that, they can think about health information in a way that's a lot closer to the actual needs of their patients. But then but the wonderful thing about ARA and the new meaningful use EHR adoption stuff is that essentially now doctors will be financially incented, not the same way the VA is, but they will be financially incented to use health information to improve the quality of care. And that's never happened before. And so essentially with open source software and the new financial reforms that we have an opportunity in the country to have a Vista effect, which is where you pair open source software with fundamental financial incentives to improve healthcare using health information. You pair those things two together, and then you get substantially better care. And so one of the things that I think people miss when you talk about open source and healthcare is you're really not talking about open source and healthcare. What you're talking about is health information and healthcare. And when you talk about health information and healthcare, you're really just talking about healthcare. So, I think it's a very big message, and that's what I'm trying to deliver.
Well, it's funny when I talk to people who are in the current industry, and they're studying the current industry. They say academics. I talked to a couple of academics, for instance, from UMass Lowell, and they obviously knew the industry very well, but they were convinced that there was no good open source alternative to what was there. It seemed like I'm sure they were evaluating it along certain criteria that the proprietary companies had mastered very well. It was just not, they had evaluated and it was not in their sphere somehow.
No, and that evaluation, which is to say open source is not where proprietary electronic healthcare record software, there's some valid points there and there's some invalid points there. The invalid points is that in general, Vista is the only thing that has been proven to work. And so when they say, well, there's just not any good open source electronic healthcare records, evidence from a clinical standpoint, the evidence is that Vista is the only one that works on a systematic level. So for instance, when you find a single hospital or a single clinic that's using proprietary software to do something clinically excellent, that happens. But you don't find a system, which is to say lots of clinics and lots of hospitals that are using healthcare information software to the degree that Vista is, you just don't find it. The VA is really the only example. The only organization that comes close is Kaiser Permanente in Southern California. And the only reason that they can do that is that essentially they have something very close to socialized medicine and they have a relationship with their proprietary software vendors that means from their perspective it basically is open source because they're in a position to say, we will make this software do whatever it says, and the vendor, because there's so much money involved, the vendors will do whatever they want. So basically they have access to the source code even though they have a proprietary license. So first is that argument. And then there's the argument of can I is there an open source solution that I as a private doctor can install? Well, the answer is that in many cases, the proprietary vendors are ahead in this respect, not because they have better technology, but because they have better business models, better support systems. There's just an industry there, and the industry of open source health information software in private practices, which is to say ignoring the clinical aspects of the software, but talking just about the business aspects of the software, which is to say, how is the software delivered? How is the software supported? It's a young industry. Now, there are some giants, and in fact, there are, and I won't have to talk about this much because as, you know, speaking in other sessions, you'll have people like Medsphere and Clear Health and other people who are doing amazing things in that young industry, but it is a young industry. So most of the time when people say, oh, there's just, you know, there's no comparison, what they're ignoring a small industry which has not started yet compared to the proprietary industry. But again, you know, one of the things that I like to say is that, yeah, there's good, which is in functional proprietary software out there. But before ARRA, before the stimulus funding, there were 13% of doctors as a high estimate of the percentage of doctors that adopted these proprietary EHR systems. Right now, we're talking across computers, across the internet, and I'm on a Mac, you might be on a Linux, you might be on Windows, but essentially, we've been computerized for years in every other industry except medicine. We didn't have to pay the auto industry to automate. We didn't have to pay them to computerize. There was never, you know, we're going to get together and we're going to make sure those auto industry people are using computers. We didn't have to do it for the education industry. We didn't have to do it for any other industry except medicine. Why is that? And the reason is that they're developing the Microsoft model of software, which is to say that you have a big, decent vendor who gets ahead of all the other proprietary vendors and generally solves the problem in question, so much so that the economy rewards them with an 80% market share of that given industry. That effect just does not work in medicine. And in fact, the very fact that we have to pay for specially paid doctors to computerize is an indication that that model won't work. So when people say, oh, the proprietary has stuff that's good and you know, there's just not any good open source stuff available, they're overestimating the proprietary stuff, they're underestimating the open source stuff, and they're not really talking about carefully about either one. So, you know, that's how I would respond to that.
And we should also mention that the software costs a huge amount. And we like to say in the open source world that free software is about freedom and not cost, but cost is important too, especially if you're talking about the small provider in rural Montana, not to mention Kenya.
And the thing is that cost in healthcare IT means something different than it does in any other industry. So the real cost is not the cost to set up, is not the cost to train. People focus on this because essentially when people talk about healthcare information, they're obsessed with purchasing costs. Sometimes they consider maintenance cost, but that both of those are negligent because what's really important for us as a society is migration costs. So if it is expensive for me to migrate my health information data, and migration is required. You know, 10 years from now, we'll have so much better software that software bought today, you'll have to migrate it to something new. But in medicine, we've been collecting health information in the form of at least billing codes for years. And what's happening now is that we have this rich data set in these old practice management systems that we are abandoning as we move to electronic healthcare records because it's too expensive to get at that data. Well, the problem with that is that the value of that data to us as a society is vastly more than the cost associated to move it, but the cost is borne by someone who gets no profit from it. So the doctors, essentially, it's a cost that they have to pay if they want to get that data, but there's no benefit to them from doing that. You know, they don't really get that information. So what I'm concerned about, and the reason why I'm pushing open source so hard, is that 50 years from now, 100 years from now, will we have the data that we collect today? And the answer is, if we do what we did so far with practice management systems, no, we won't have the data. If we use proprietary electronic healthcare systems, no, we won't have the data. And that's tragic because the science of medicine is not moving forward, and it's precisely because of cost. So when we say open source is cheaper, it's a moral statement. not a financial statement. I mean, it really has a bigger impact than people realize.
And that also goes back to the point you made about the incentives, that the Recovery Act and the meaningful use criteria say that this is a public requirement that we have available data, and we will pay the doctors to meet that requirement.
Well, so first of all, there's no requirement that you have to participate in the current version, and even the later versions of meaningful use. A doctor, if they want to continue to be a non-meaningful user of electronic healthcare record systems, as long as they want. The wonderful thing about ARRA, and I have to compliment the people who thought of this, is that it's a tax that people don't mind. And it's like, you know, over the next 5, maybe 10 years, doctors will be paid more for using electronic healthcare record systems. But later, after that, they will be taxed for not doing so. They'll be paid less money. So it's essentially a clever way to introduce a tax. And that's great because, you know, taxes – despite how we all feel about them, do fundamentally change financial incentives. And 20 years from now, you're not going to be paying doctors to use healthcare software. You're going to be penalizing them for not using it. And then it's really a lot closer to what you're suggesting, which is to say it's essentially a mandate at that point. You know, we're moving in that direction, but it's a slow and gradual path, and it's a good one.
Well, I think it's about time to wrap up this fairly long interview. I'm going to be talking to someone who works with World Vista, whose name is Joseph Dalmolin, someone who's trying to help extend Vista to other kinds of providers. And I hope to hear more about the quality issue from him. And I wanted to mention that you'll be at the open source convention, but you actually have your own open source and healthcare convention. Won't you say just about a minute about that?
Well, thank you for mentioning that. And you know, when I found out that O'Reilly was having a conference and that they were going to include open source, I realized that my conference really wasn't a conference. It was more like a summit. And the reason is that obviously open source is the O'Reilly conference is going to be much bigger, lots more people there. But the open source healthcare software conference, which is you can go there at oshealthcon.com, which of course if that you'd add that to your links would be great. It's really a summit of the people who are the insiders of the health, the open source health software movement, people who are deeply, deeply knowledgeable about all kinds of things. And we hold it in Houston every year because the CTO of World Vista and also Dr. Ignacio Valdez and myself all live in Houston. And three people who are kind of luminaries in the field, although I probably shouldn't compliment myself like that, those two certainly are. Luminaries in the field, having three of us kind of as the old guard available in one city makes it pretty big. There's only about 100 people who are really deeply into this in the country, and this is the meeting where you get to hobnob with some of those people who come together and really decide where open source healthcare software is going. And so if you really want to get involved with this, you ought to come to the summit meeting because it's really going to be very intimate. A meeting with some of the most important people in our field.
Now, I've had conversations this week with Brian Behlendorf and Arian Malik about the NHIN project, the Connect and the National Health Information Network. And I'm going to be talking to Joseph Dalmolin, as I mentioned, about Vista. There are many other interesting projects in open source and healthcare, which we didn't get a chance to talk about today. But you will be talking about them at the conference, I know. There's even a Wikipedia page devoted to open source projects in healthcare, so people can easily get some summaries about it.
Yeah, and we wouldn't want to tip our hand too much. We want people thirsty for more. So you know, that's the point of this. We want people to come to the conference and listen to my talk.
Great, that's what I feel too. Thank you very much, Fred.
Okay, good to hear from you. Thanks.